Hello and welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, August 18th, 2021. I am your reader, Ike Rayford, with today's news. Our mini editorial comes from Stephen Farr of Sioux City. Woodbury County has a low vaccination rate like Florida and Texas. Like Florida and Texas, the state of Iowa has laws against requiring vaccinations and masks. Is Woodbury County going to have a surge of COVID-19 infections like Florida and Texas? Again, that is from Stephen Farr of Sioux City. Our weather for today is mostly sunny, a high of 90 and a low of 68. Front page story comes to us from Dolly A. Butts of the Journal, Long Lost Brothers in Arms. Two Vietnam veterans from Sioux City reunite after 50 plus years. After undergoing triple bypass surgery in February, Don Stevens was feeling depressed. Before his heart attack, the 74-year-old Sioux City man had lost weight. He was in shape. He had received a good bill of health from his cardiologist. In the aftermath of the medical emergency, he wondered, why me? Stevens said he now knows the answer to the question. It all happened so he could reunite with a brother-in-arms, whom he first met roughly 51 years earlier, at an evacuation hospital in Da Nang, Vietnam. Now I know why I had a heart attack, to meet him, to renew our friendship, Stephen said last week over the hum of exercise equipment. As he sat next to 73-year-old Frank Moss in the cardiac rehabilitation clinic at Unity Point Health, St. Luke's, Sunnybrook Medical Plaza, framed medals, books, and other military memorabilia laid on a table in front of the men, who both served in the U.S. Army during the Vietnam War. Like family, Stevens and Moss were both deployed to Vietnam in November 1969. They were 22 and 21, respectively, at the time. Most everybody else was 18, Stevens said. If you were 22 and you went over there, you were an old man. Moss was stationed in Da Nang with the 212th Combat Aviation Battalion. He worked in the communications center and handled classified materials, which led the Specialist 5 to travel via helicopter to Phu Bay, Chu Lai, and other places in the country where U.S. military units were located. Stevens, a sergeant, was stationed at Fire Base Nancy, 9 miles southeast of Quang Tri. He said the fire support base was equipped with powerful cannons. They became a favorite target of the North Vietnamese because they were devastating to everybody. Stevens said of the weapons, when you're over there every day, you woke up at a firebase and you said, today's the day I die. The men recall spending time in the dark, hearing nothing but the birds. They said temperatures would reach 110 degrees in the open fields and fall to 55 degrees when the monsoon rains came. It would rain so hard it would hurt your face, Stevens recalls. When my kids were growing up, I wouldn't talk about it at all. Finally, I did say, go to the darkest place you can find without any light. Sit up there at night and imagine what's out there. At 2:45 a.m. on April 5th, 1970, Stevens said the firebase was overrun by a North Vietnamese sapper division. His eardrums were blown out during the attack, which killed several soldiers. He was flown to the 95th Evacuation Hospital in Da Nang, where he spent a month. Stevens said he suffered 40% nerve damage in each ear and heard nothing but a solid whistling for 2 weeks. Back then, it just so happened that Moss's wife, Darlene, and Stevens' mother, Irene, worked at Travelers Insurance, which was located on the top floor of the Badgerow Building in downtown Sioux City. Irene said to Darlene, wouldn't it be wonderful if Frank could get over to visit Don? The letters took about a week to get back and forth. We didn't know if we were ever going to meet each other, Moss said. I called over to the hospital and asked if they could have visitors, and they said, oh, yes. Moss traveled 5 or 6 miles to the hospital and spent part of the day with the Stevens, who was touched that Moss took the time to visit him. He almost couldn't fathom the fact that he was face-to-face with someone from Sioux City, being that he was more than 8,000 miles from home. To have somebody from Sioux City, Iowa, come to visit you, it was almost like family, Stevens said. Moss said he tried to make another trip to the hospital before Stevens was released, but he said the bridge was closed off, so he couldn't cross over. Stevens returned to the States. He said he received a steak dinner from the military, but no counseling services. He repressed his feelings and tried to forget the war. When I got back to the United States and I was laying on a bench in Denver, two policemen came up to me and with their batons hit the bottom of my feet and said, "Get the hell out of my airport." That was my welcome home. Stevens recalled, "Nobody appreciates us. So when I got home, I took off my uniform, never talked about it again, and basically just tried to forget everything that took place." A chance reunion. Stevens and Moss' wives played bridge together several times over the years, but the fact that their husband served in Vietnam never came up. The men lived just a couple of miles away from one another in Sioux City, but they never crossed paths until they struck up a conversation while pedaling exercise bikes at the cardiac rehab facility this year. In 2009, Moss began having heart issues, which he attributes to family history and exposure to Agent Orange in Vietnam. He started coming to rehab to get back in shape. A month after Stevens' heart attack, he was unexpectedly reunited with Moss. As the two pedaled, they got to talking about where they went to school and where they worked. Moss mentioned that he was employed with Terra Industries when he got back from Vietnam. Stevens responded that he served in Vietnam too and started working at the post office after returning home. He said, "Are you done, Stevens, the ex-postmaster?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, I'm mad at you," Stevens recalled. "I thought, what the did I do as postmaster that 20 years later he'd be mad at me?" Then Stevens said it was as if a door had opened in his mind and the memories began flooding back to him. "It was like 50 some years we've been in the same city and we never took the opportunity to say hi or thank you or remember me," he said. Stevens went home and told his wife Mary about the chance encounter. She couldn't believe that the story about the two men meeting at the hospital in Vietnam never came up while she was playing bridge with Moss's late wife Darlene. "He went to Healing, I graduated from East. Of course, we were rivals, but when you're in Vietnam, you're not rivals. It's very special," Moss said of the reunion. Stevens sees the parallels between the Taliban seizure of the Afghanistan capital of Kabul and the fall of Saigon, and can empathize with what younger veterans are feeling. He said he hopes the story of his reunion with Moss helps other veterans who are struggling to find hope. "We're lucky. We have found each other," Stevens said. "There are guys out there who have nobody, who don't have any opportunities. They're out there wandering the streets. That's the thing that bothers me most." And again, that's from Dolly A. Butts. And there is a picture of veterans Don Stevens and Frank Moss sitting in the facilities that they exercise in. Another front page story, Siouxland District Health recommends extra dose. And this is again from Dolly A. Butts. Siouxland District Health Department is advising that moderately or severely immune compromised people receive an extra dose of mRNA COVID-19 vaccine in accordance with new CDC recommendations. The recommendation is based on emergency data that suggests some people with compromised immune systems do not always build up a strong immune response and may be less protected with the normal two-dose series. Recipients of organ or stem cell transplants, people with advanced or untreated HIV infections, active recipients of treatments for cancer, and people who are taking some medications that weaken the immune system are some of those who fall under this category. Siouxland District Health Department Deputy Director Tyler Brock said Tuesday he doesn't know how many immune-compromised people live in Woodbury County, but noted that about 3% of the county's population falls under the new recommendation. Brock said District Health has no plan to hold mass vaccination clinics for the immune-compromised. "That is a fairly small number of people in the community, so mass clinic is probably unnecessary, but there's vaccine in numerous places around town, and we assume that people would rather get it at their convenience versus one day, one time, etc." Mass clinics were more important when we weren't as many places offering vaccines. But now people can get vaccine whenever and wherever they want, which is more convenient for them, he said. I'm also not sure it's the greatest idea to make moderately or severely immune compromised people come to a mass clinic with lots of people and potential exposures to COVID and the other infections. District Health said in a statement issued Monday that people should contact their health care provider if they are unsure whether they should receive this extra dose based on their immune compromised status. There is no requirement to prove immune compromised status, and people can receive vaccine wherever it is offered. The statement said the extra dose should be the brand in the individual received for the initial two dose series. People should wait at least 28 after their two dose series was complete before getting the extra dose. While there is limited for information regarding the risk of receiving an extra dose, so far reactions to the extra dose seems to be similar to that of the first two dose series, according to the settlement. Most symptoms were mild to moderate. In our local and state page, Iowa working to take in eligible Afghan refugees, and this is from Rob Boschart of the Journal Des Moines Bureau. Reynolds wants to support Afghans who helped the U.S. government. Des Moines. Governor Kim Reynolds said Tuesday her office was working with federal officials to help relocate eligible Afghan refugees in Iowa who worked for the U.S. government and are now fleeing a country gripped with chaos after armed Taliban forces seized control of Kabul this week. We have the capacity. We want to work with them to get them here, Reynolds said during a WHO AM radio interview at the Iowa State Fair. They've helped us, helped Americans, and we're more than willing to help them relocate to Iowa. According to news reports, evacuation flights resumed from Kabul's International Airport Tuesday after a friends and panic-filled day that saw thousands of Afghans swarm the tarmac, including some who fell off departing planes in desperate attempts to get out of Afghanistan. The international and domestic fallout associated with the Biden administration's handling of the phase-out of U.S. troops in Afghanistan after a 20-year presence and the failure of trained Afghan forces to protect their country were playing out as the focus shifted to evacuating Americans and relocating Afghan special immigrant visa recipients to new locations such as Iowa. On Monday, Democratic President Joe Biden sent Congress a request for up to $500 million under the Migrant Refugee Assistance Act for unexpected urgent needs of refugees, victims of conflict, and other people at risk as a result of the situation in Afghanistan. Iowa U.S. Senate Joni Ernst, a Red Oak Republican, told the Des Moines Register that Iowa must resettle Afghan refugees fleeing their failed nation that collapsed after the Taliban took power. The Republican governor agreed, saying the state already has settled 94 Iraqi and Afghan special immigrant visa recipients since fiscal 2017, and her office was exploring how to continue to support the Afghan visa recipients who supported the U.S. government. My team has been working with the federal government just to see if there are any new processes, any new emergencies, rules that are being put into place, and then what are they doing with the vetting process, Reynolds said during the WHO interview. It's a little fluid right now with everything that's going on, and so we're continuing to reach out to them, understand what that process looks like, and make them aware that we are willing and able to take on additional recipients, she said. Other news, first redistricting maps expected September 16th. This starts the process for redrawing political boundaries. And this is from David Pitts of the Associated Press out of Des Moines. The first Iowa redistricting maps will be delivered on September 16th, beginning the process for redrawing political boundaries for legislative and congressional districts, a state official said Tuesday. The nonpartisan Iowa Legislative Services agency received updated software and U.S. Census Bureau data from a state vendor on Monday and will begin drawing new maps, said Ed Cook, legal counsel for the LSA, the agency responsible for providing redistricting maps under Iowa law. The law allows LSA to take 45 days after it receives census data, but Cook said he expects the work to be done in 35 days. State law gives the five-member Iowa Temporary Redistricting Advisory Commission 14 days to hold public hearings to gather public comment and prepare a report for the Iowa legislature. 3 days after they receive the report, lawmakers may meet in special session to vote on the maps. The commission met Tuesday to discuss the timeline with Cook, and members agreed to name former LSA employee Sue Lodero as the group's fifth member and chairwoman. It will meet again on Monday to discuss when and how to hold the public hearings and whether they will be held virtually, since the state is experiencing increasing COVID-19 cases in most counties. Republicans hold a majority in the Iowa legislature, so they will have the power to approve or reject the first set of maps. They must be approved or rejected without modification. If rejected, the LSA must, within 35 days, draw up a second set of maps, and lawmakers again will vote them up or down. If that plan is rejected, a third set is drawn by the LSA within 35 days, and lawmakers may amend the maps like any other legislation before approving them. In 2000, the legislature rejected the first set of maps but approved the second, and in 2010, lawmakers approved the first set of maps. The Iowa Constitution requires legislative districts to be enacted by lawmakers by September 15th, a deadline that cannot be met this year due to census data coming in late than usual as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. The Iowa Supreme Court is empowered to take over the process for legislative maps and ensure they are completed if the deadlines are missed. It's unclear how the courts plan to handle the process, but it said in April it would meet its constitutional responsibility by implementing a process that follows the law. Some have interpreted that as meaning the court would allow the normal process of legislative approval to take place even after the deadline, but the court has not further commented on its plans. And another story from David Pitts of the Associated Press. At State Fair, no mask required, vaccines are free. Nestled between corn dog stands, animal barns, and booths touting hot tubs and John Deere tractors, a Hy-Vee pharmacist and several nurses have been administering COVID-19 vaccines at the Iowa State Fair to anyone eligible that wants one. Their booth didn't have the long lines or more popular attractions, but by Monday, more than 150 people had received a shot since the 11-day fair started on Thursday. More than 400,000 people attended the fair in its first 4 days. Still, in a state where only half of the population is fully vaccinated, pharmacist Tiffany Algetz was encouraged that people were changing their minds. "I think the Delta variant has swayed a lot of people that weren't sure if they wanted it or not, and a lot of people with kids want to get their kids back in school," Algetz said Monday. State fairs in Illinois, Indiana, Minnesota, and Wisconsin also are offering COVID-19 vaccinations. As the Delta variant spreads nationwide and relaxed masking leaves public health officials concerned about another surge in infections. At the Iowa State Fair on Monday, 3 people got vaccinated in the first 2 hours. Elsewhere on the fairgrounds, people stood close together in lines for rides, cheese on a stick, and funnel cakes. Others pushed baby strollers through crowded barns housing sheep, pigs, cows, and horses, with electric fans pushing her around on a sunny 82-degree day. Masks were rare, although some wore them inside buildings. Fair officials canceled the 2020 event due to COVID-19, but are following Republican Governor Kim Reynolds' policy of personal responsibility by allowing fairgoers this year to decide whether to be vaccinated or wear a mask. Public health officials recommend wearing a mask where there are crowds. The positivity rate in Polk County, where the fairgrounds are located, has increased to nearly 11%, according to Centers for Disease Control and Prevention data. Cases have accelerated rapidly in August, increasing by nearly 42% in the past week to a 7-day average of 758. All but 3 of Iowa's 99 counties are experiencing a substantial or high rate of spread, and the state's vaccination rate has stalled at about 50% fully vaccinated. Meanwhile, the fair is on track to attract an estimated 1 million visitors. Doctors were concerned that a surge in Delta variant infections could come at an already challenging time for hospitals. It's not a matter of will we see increased cases, it's just a matter of how many, said Dr. Clint Harthorn, an emergency medicine specialist in Des Moines. If we were to experience a surge of COVID patients, we're going to be in some big trouble because of our capacity issues that are at hand currently, which are not COVID-related. Des Moines has an acute shortage of nurses, so even if beds are available, there aren't nurses to tend to them, and patients can't be placed. Even now, patients coming into the emergency department can wait 10 hours for a regular hospital bed, he said. Several Iowa Faragos got vaccinated because of fears about the Delta variant or because family members have been sick and they understand how serious COVID-19 can be. Others have jobs that require vaccinations, Aljit said. Jesse James, 13, of Pleasantville, rolled up his sleeve for a Pfizer shot on Monday. His mother, Angela Collins, said he's going on a class trip to Washington, D.C. in October, and she wants him vaccinated before he flies. Both acknowledge a driving force behind the decision was his grandmother. I'm going back to school this year, and my grandma kind of nudged me into getting the vaccine, he said. I mostly agree with her. Janila Shihu, 18, saw the Hy-Vee display was offering the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and decided to get her shot. Shihu is an American Cultural Exchange Service foreign exchange student from Kosovo, was attending the fair with her host mother, Tammy Beeson, of Bettendorf. She had been in the U.S. for 4 days and is preparing to go to college. I know that I'm going to be with people, and it's important to me to keep myself and others safe, she said. In Wisconsin, 608 people were vaccinated during the state's fair 11-day run, perhaps enticed by the promise of a free cream puff pastry. The push to vaccinate at the fair came as COVID-19 cases in Wisconsin hit their highest 7-day average since February. At the Indiana State Fair, which opened July 30th, Indiana University Health is offering Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson vaccines daily. Spokeswoman Sophie McNunn said 304 vaccines were administered as of Monday. The fair will last more than 3 weeks to spread out crowds and allow for fairground cleaning. The fair typically draws nearly 1 million people, and masks are not required. Vaccines also will be offered at the Minnesota Department of Health, Ramsey County, and Homeland Health at the Minnesota State Fair, which begins August 26th and lasts for 12 days. 2 million visitors typically attend at the 11-day Illinois State Fair, which began last Thursday. 156 shots were given through Monday, according to the Illinois Department of Public Health. Nearly 78% of them were given a single-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine. The briefs for today: out of Lincoln, Nebraska, labor shortage forces state park cuts. Labor shortages that have plagued businesses across the country have also put the squeeze on Nebraska state parks, leading officials to make the unprecedented move to cut hours and services at parks across the state. State parks were already short-staffed this summer, operating with only an estimated 70% of their normal workforce. State Park Administrator Jim Swenson told the Lincoln Journal-Star. Now, with many seasonal workers headed back to school, parks are more short-staffed than ever. The Nebraska Game and Parks Commission recently released a list of hour and service reductions at many of its properties, including scaling back hours at the Family Aquatic Center and John Wayne Stables at Mahoney State Park at Ashland. Trail rides and swimming pools at Ponca and Niobrara State Parks are now operating on weekends only. Opening hours for visitor centers and offices have also been cut at Wildcat Hill State Recreation Area and Nature Center, Ash Hollow State Historical Park, Fort Kearney, and Lake McConaughey, among others. If you would like, the Journal would like to hear your memories of 9/11. Were you September 11th, 2001, as we approach the 20th anniversary of that tragic event, we want to hear from you. What were you doing that day? How it affected your life and seeing how you may have changed in the past 2 decades. Send us memories, 250 words or less, and we'll include them in a special section which will run in the September Journal around the time of the anniversary. You can send them to bmiller@siouxcityjournal.com. Also, the online poll, today's question is, how would you compare the U.S. evacuation of Kabul to the U.S. evacuation of Saigon in 1975? Yesterday's poll, the question was, did you go swimming in one of Sioux City's three public pools this summer? If you answered yes, you were part of the 13%, and you answered no, you were part of 87% of total 30 votes. And the no's get it with 87%. I actually was one who did go swimming in one of the pools this year. If you would like to speak out, today's question is, what's your reaction to the CDC recommending an additional COVID dose of vaccine for immune compromised people? You can sound off at www.facebook.com/Sioux City Journal. In our local recap, the mayor is ready for fireworks vote, and that's from Dolly A. Butts. Future of fireworks in Sioux City uncertain, some seek a ban. Sioux City Mayor Bob Scott indicated Monday that he's prepared to vote on a fireworks ban. I'm ready to vote. I'm waiting for the council to make sure they're ready to vote, Scott said during the council's comments portion of the meeting in response to Councilman Pete Grokin asking what happens now with the fireworks. Scott did not say whether he will vote for or against an all-out ban on fireworks within city limits. Moments before that exchange, residents Mark Solheim and Randy Giles requested that the council adopt a total ban on fireworks. Both Solheim and Giles have previously implored the council to restore peace in Sioux City's neighborhoods. There will always be those who do not follow the law. However, law-abiding citizens will, and that will cut down on some of the terror, Gills said. Last January, in response to the complaints of pet owners, veterans, and others, the council passed ordinance changes that added a municipal infraction penalty for property owners who permit firework violations to occur on the property. Mayor Pro Tem Dan Moore also led a PSA campaign ahead of the most recent holiday to encourage residents to adhere to the city's firework ordinance, which allows discharges only from 1 to 11 p.m. on July 3rd and 4th, and from 1 p.m. on December 31st until 12:30 a.m. on January 1st. Both Giles, and Solheim have said those efforts did not do enough to curb illegal discharges. Giles said Sioux City Fire Marshal Mark Asoff and retired Sioux City Fire Marshal Chuck Hirsch support firework bans. Giles said she has spoken with fire officials in Dubuque, Cedar Rapids, and Iowa City, Des Moines, and Spencer about what they do to protect their citizens. She said they all don't regret setting ordinances to prohibit the use of fireworks. I've talked to VA centers all across the state. I've talked to fire marshals all across the state. They all want to see fireworks banned in the state, Solheim said. Our own fire marshal, Mark Asoff, says we need to ban fireworks. His predecessor, Chuck Hirsch, says fireworks should be banned. I don't understand how we can appoint someone to this position of authority and responsibility to oversee the safety of our community and then not pay attention to what they have to say. Grokin, a retired Sioux City police captain, said during a July 12th council meeting that he wouldn't be opposed to voting for a ban. Councilman Alex Waters described the firework issue Monday as a really challenging topic. It's something that I try giving a lot of thought about and weighing pros and cons and trying to understand both sides, he said. I hear your concerns. Also, vets react to the Afghanistan, and this is from Caitlin Yamita and Dolly Butts, who are journal staff writers. Iowans who serve say their situation is unyielding social tragedy. Holstein, Iowa, and on a chaotic June morning in 2011, Staff Sergeant Peter Mattson took a bullet in the right shoulder while engaged in a shootout in Afghanistan. As gunfire peppered the area, Mattson hopped from his truck and continued leading soldiers. 40 U.S. troops battled under Mattson's command this mission. One conducted in Paktia province, the firefight lasted for hours. The Iowa National Guard later honored the hosting man for heroism, presenting him with the Bronze Star with the V for Valor, the top honor bestowed upon any of the soldiers who served in Afghanistan that year, and a Purple Heart. As the Taliban swept into Kabul on Sunday, bringing an end to a two-decade campaign in which the U.S. and its allies had tried to transform Afghanistan, Mattson reflected on his tour of duty in the country, the first from 2004 to 2005, and the second from 2010 to 11. The first time I made some really good friends, Afghanis, and we got out to see the people. Now to hear of a lot of that is getting destroyed is kind of upsetting, Mattson, 48, said. Monday, it looks to be diminishing all the hard work we put in both times we went in. Across the country, there were a range of opinions expressed by Americans who served in Afghanistan about the Taliban's rapid takeover. The U.S. troops were withdrawn. With the capital city gripped with panic, the U.S. struggled to evacuate its citizens and Afghani allies from the Kabul airport. Ford Fairchild, who spent a little over a year representing the U.S. Justice Department in Afghanistan, said Monday he's not surprised by the dire situation in the country, but is also nonetheless horrified. This is just an unyielding social tragedy. The people of Afghanistan, particularly our partners in Afghanistan, are facing a reversion of their rights and liberties that is just almost unfathomable. It's just heartbreaking, said Fairchild, a Turo, Iowa native who's been an assistant U.S. attorney in Sioux City since 2004. Fairchild served as a special deputy marshal and the justice attaché, the U.S. Attorney General's representative in Afghanistan, from 2016 to 2017. He said his job was to work active investigations for prosecution in the United States, as well as advise and mentor high-level investigations of narcotics, terrorism, and other cases involving national security. The collapse of the Afghani government and the Taliban seizing control was predicted, said Fairchild, who noted it was a risk that every policymaker was aware of. I can't believe this has been allowed to happen, and I don't know how you would have stopped it, he said. Fairchild said he worries that the situation emboldens our enemies across the world and undermines our allies' belief in our ability to commit to difficult problems. There were many problems with the way we litigated our efforts overseas, and one of those was that we haven't really been in Afghanistan for 20 years. We've been there 20 times for a year. Each time, that made a difficult problem even more difficult to address, I think, he said. In the end, the timing of the withdrawal probably didn't much matter, said Jeremy Crude, a Sioux Center, Iowa native who served in the U.S. Marines from 2006 to 2010 during an overseas tour in the Pacific Ocean, the Middle East, as well as in Afghanistan. It could have been 5 years ago or 5 years from now. The ultimate result would have been the same. Crude, the former commander of the William Munster American Legion Post 272 in Boyden, Iowa, explained, the important part of the withdrawal was to provide the Afghan National Army and Afghan National Police the support necessary to bring the fight to the Taliban. Now living in a suburb outside of Houston, Texas, he said the next step should be for the United States to absolutely honor our commitment to the Afghanis who risked their lives to aid us. Crude said that aid should be given to specifically, but not limited to, interpreters and their families. Our quote for the day comes from Marlene Dietrich, American actress, born 1901, died 1992. It's the friends you can call up at 4 a.m. that matter. Again, that is from Marlene Dietrich, American actress. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, August 18, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Dolores Elizabeth Roselle of McCook Lake, South Dakota. Dolores Elizabeth Roselle, 88, of McCook Lake, passed away Sunday, August 15, 2021, in Sioux City following a brief hospitalization. Graveside services will be held at 11 a.m. on Friday in Memorial Park Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Waterbury Funeral Services of Sergeant Bluff. Patricia K. Clift, 82, of Sioux City, died Friday, August 12, 2021. Services private, August 19th, Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Margie C. Benson, of North Sioux City, 77, died Sunday, August 15, 2021. Private services will be held, arrangements with Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Marilyn Visser, of Hartley, Iowa, 73, died Sunday, August 15, 2021. Services are August 20th at 10:30 a.m., Hap Kittleson Community Center, Everly, Iowa. Burial will be Harrison Township Cemetery, May City, Iowa. Visitation August 19th from 2 to 7 p.m., Hartley Funeral Home, F. Hartley. Clifford W. Roost of South Sioux City. Clifford W. Roost, 91, of South Sioux City, passed away Saturday, August 14th, 2021, at a local hospital. Services will be held at 1 p.m. on Thursday at Moore and Becker Hunt Funeral Home. Visitation with the family present will be from 5 to 7 p.m. today at the funeral home. Burial will be at the Memorial Park Cemetery. Online condolences may be given at www.meyerbrotherschapels.com. The family would like to thank Wendy, Shemaine, and Barb at Regency Square for their special care of Dad. Craig C. Roddy of Dakota Dunes, 57, died Sunday, August 15, 2021. Services August 20th at 2 p.m. Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Burial is Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation August 20th from 12 to 2 p.m. at the funeral home. Lila Veronica Lease of Sioux City. Lila Veronica Lease, 76, of Sioux City, passed away on Saturday, August 14, 2021, at a Sioux City nursing home facility. Services will be at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel with Father Andrew Gallus officiating. Visitation with the family present will begin at 9:30 a.m. on Saturday at the funeral home. Burial will follow at St. Michael's Catholic Cemetery in rural South Sioux City. Online condolences may be offered at www.meyerbrotherschapels.com. Maury Weirhart of Spencer, Iowa. Maury Weirhart died Friday, July 30th, 2021, in Spencer, surrounded by his family at the age of 74. Services were held on August 9th at Riverside Cemetery in Spencer. Arrangements are with the Warner Funeral Home in Spencer, www.warnerfuneralhome.com. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Iowa Golf Foundation. John Anthony Malferro, Jr. of Sioux City. John Malferro, 75, passed away on Monday, August 9, 2021, at Pierre, South Dakota. Visitation for friends and family will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Friday, with a prayer service from 7 to 8 at the Waterbury Funeral Services of Sioux City, located at 4125 Orleans Avenue, Sioux City, Iowa, 51106. The memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. at the funeral home. Burial will follow the service, and informal reception will be held after the graveside services. Valerie L. Counterman of Sioux City, 60, died Tuesday, August 17, 2021. Arrangements with Waterbury Funeral Services of Sioux City. Larry C. Countryman of Dakota Dunes. Larry C. Countryman, 73, of Dakota Dunes, formerly of Mulville, Iowa, passed away on Saturday, August 14, 2021, at a local hospital. Services will be held at 11 a.m. on Friday at the United Methodist Church of Mulville with Pastor Harold Worley officiating. Burial will be held at a later date at the Arlington Cemetery of Mulville. A visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday at the church. A live stream of the service will be provided throughout the funeral home website at 11 a.m. on Friday. The Nicholas D. Jensen Funeral Home of Mulville is in charge of the arrangements. Online condolences can be made at www.nicholasdjensenfuneralhome.com. A memorial scholarship is being established in Larry's honor. A memorial donation in lieu of flowers is appreciated. Robert J. Bob Harms of Sioux City. Robert J. Bob Harms, 67, of Sioux City, passed away on Sunday, August 15, 2021, following a short illness with cancer. There will be a celebration of life at 4 p.m. on Thursday at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Visitation with the family present will be 1 hour prior to the service. Private graveside services will be at the Yanawa City Cemetery. Online condolences may be sent to www.meyerbrotherschapels.com. Larry Keith Connor of Lamars, Iowa, 83, died Monday, August 2nd, 2021. Celebration of life, August 20th at 7 p.m., Myra Johnson Funeral Home. Lamar's burial at L.A. Date Cine Cemetery, Cine, Iowa. Visitation, August 20th at 5 p.m. at the funeral home. Margaret T. Greenwade of Sioux City. Margaret T. Greenwade, 92, of Sioux City, passed away with her three daughters by her side on Sunday, August 15, 2021, at her residence. Mass of Christian burial will be 10:30 a.m. on Friday at Holy Cross Parish, Blessed Sacrament Church, Catholic Church in Sioux City, with Father Peter Nguyen, celebrant. Burial will follow at Graceland Park Cemetery. The family will greet friends 1 hour prior to the service on Friday at the church. Arrangements are with the Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Margaret touched a lot of lives and will be missed by many. Shirley M. Garthright of Wakefield, Nebraska. Shirley M. Garthright, 92, of Wakefield, passed away Sunday, August 15, 2021. Services will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday at the Moore and Becker Hunt Funeral Home in South Sioux City. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday at the funeral home. Burial will be at Graceland Park Cemetery. Online condolences may be directed to MeyerBrothersChapels.com. Shirley's love, compassion, and incredible smile will never be forgotten. Neither will the pancakes. And that completes the obituaries for today, Wednesday, August 18th. As always, if you're celebrating a birthday, happy birthday to you. Wednesday, August 18th, 2021, your horoscope says stick to your plan and finish what you start. Do whatever it takes to accommodate trends. Align yourself with people who have something to offer. Look at your strengths and find a way to use them appropriately. Do your best and make the most of your skills and time. A steady pace forward will lead to better days ahead. Again, happy birthday if you are celebrating a birthday today. You are celebrating with Misha Tate, mixed martial artist, Bart Scott, football player, radio personality, Andy Samberg, actor, Caitlin Olsen, Ed Norton, actor, director, Madeline Stowe also celebrating, Dennis Leary is celebrating, as well as Robert Redford, Rosalind Carter, former First Lady, also celebrating. Some of those that have celebrated with you, no longer with us, Meriwether Lewis, explorer, Shelley Winters, actress, Roberto Clemente, baseball player, and Mr. Patrick Swayze, all celebrated at some point or another. For our sports page, we had, I believe, media day for the Metro teams. So I'll read a little bit of their stories, but I'll start with a prep boys golf story. Moss leads Stars in first triangular. The North High School boys golf team started its season strong on Tuesday, winning a triangular at the Sun Valley Golf Course that involved West and Council Bluffs Lincoln. The Stars won the team competition by shooting a collective 321, beating Lincoln by 76 strokes. The Wolverines placed in third, getting a 446. Star sophomore Blake Moss was the tournament's medalist as he carded an 18-hole score of 71. Moss' lowest score during an 18-hole round last season was an 81, and he averaged an 88 throughout 2020. That put him 5 over par on the Sun Valley course. Moss shot a 37 on the front nine, then he shot 34 on the final nine holes. His back nine 34 matched his season total for a low score last season. Moss was disappointed he double bogeyed final hole, but there's much of the season left, and Stars coach David Denharter is eager to see Moss's progress. Blake is a really talented kid, Denharter said. This is a little bit of a shorter course, and that plays to his strengths really well. He doesn't hit it super far, but he hits it well enough here. It's a really nice round. Moss said that he had worked on his chipping throughout the summer, knowing that his game near and around the greens will come in handy since he doesn't drive the ball far off the tee. I felt pretty good, Moss said. I started off a little slow, then I finished strong. I've been playing good though. And congratulations to Mr. Moss for meddling. And the preview for the North football, Stars aim for playoffs. North expects balanced offensive tack. This is from Shane Lance. There is a new and exciting feeling making its way through the halls of the North High School football program this season. Hope. Last season, the North football squad improved from its 2019 record of 1-8 to a respectable 3-5 mark in 2020. This year, with the majority of its offensive line, defensive line, and linebacking core returning, and some exciting young players providing intrigue on both sides of the ball, North coach Mitch Moore believes that this year's team can accomplish even more. We want to just keep improving on that win total, Moore said. The total is to get to 500 and plus. I think we've got a really good chance. We've got a really good football team this year. Our schedule plays out well for us. We're just looking to continue to build on the momentum we had from last season. Aside from the line, which returns all but one player, there are plenty of unanswered questions for the Stars on offense. At the quarterback position, junior Carson Strobeam looks to get the majority of the snaps after the graduation of 2020 starter Gavin Haig. At running back, junior Brady Waverunk returns after putting up a team-high 532 yards on 4,800 carries, while senior Desmond Grace III is the team's top returning wide receiver. Last season, Grace hauled in 20 catches for 231 yards. Good measurement for 11.6 yards per completion. And the East football is eyeing a state playoff berth, also from Shane Lance. Expectations are high on the East High football field this year, with the Black Raiders coming off of a 6-2 season in 2020 and senior quarterback Luke Longville back under center. Head coach Brian Webb is hoping his squad can finally make it back to the state playoffs. Before the 2020 season, in which every team in Iowa qualified for the playoffs, the Black Raiders hadn't made a postseason appearance since 2015. I think making the playoffs is a goal and an aspiration that our kids have. Webb said, there is big picture. You couldn't talk about those things, but I think it comes down to day-to-day processes and taking it game by game. You've got to take care of what is in front of you, and what is in front of you is today and tomorrow. It'll just happen if we do the right things today and tomorrow. Last year, Longville emerged as a standout quarterback for the Black Raiders in his first varsity seasons with 58.3% passing rate of 131.2. While Longville's throwing arm is one of the more team's most valuable weapons, Webb thinks his leadership ability is even more important. I think his leadership is number one, Webb said. He goes to every single workout. He works his butt off, goes to camps and clinics, and is always trying to improve himself. The kids see how hard he works towards our program. He has put a lot of time in this. And then we have one more preview from West. We're going to shock people. Wolverines ready to prove doubters wrong. And this again is from Shane Lance. Brandon Holmes and the Sioux City West football team are ready to surprise Northwest Iowa football fans in 2021. The past few years have been challenging for the Wolverines, to say the least. The team has gone winless in each of the past two seasons and currently hold a 25-game losing streak, a skid which dates back to September 7, 2018. But this year, Holmes, the Wolverine second-year head coach, is confident that the program can fight its way to respectability and maybe even score the team's first winning season since 2006. While even a single win would spell an improvement over the last 2 years, Holmes wants more. As a coach, you never want to limit yourself to just one or two wins, Holmes said. You always think that you have a chance at winning all of them. This year, with the seniors that we have come back and the additions that we do have, I am very optimistic that we can definitely get a few of those in the win column this year. According to Holmes, it all starts on the line for the Wolverines. Last season, the Wolverines went into the year with only one senior lineman in Travis Vieira. Now, with a year of experience under their belt, Holmes expects big things from juniors Logan Miniman, Caden Buss, and C.J. Dunheffler, along with seniors Todd Yule and Luis Cota on both sides of the ball. Offensive line and defensive line-wise, it is very much a strong point of our team, Holmes said. We know we can count on those guys. They know they can put in the work, and we'll bust their butts every day. That is what they're showing every day in the weight room. Also, Dakota Valley ranked number 4 in preseason SDFBCA poll. This is from the Journal staff. North Sioux City, the Dakota Valley football team started the season with a number 4 ranking in Class 11A in the South Dakota Coaches Association Week 0 Coaches poll. The Panthers finished the 2020 season with a 6-4 overall record, but coming to the new season with 21 new starters. The Panthers came in one spot behind number 3 ranked Madison, while Canton and Dale Rapids are ranked number 1 and 2, respectively. Elsewhere in the poll, Alcester Hudson is ranked number 4 in Class 9B, one spot behind Fulton area. Cubs had a 5-4 overall record in 2020 and will start the season on August 24th at St. Mary's. Siouxland teams rank high in preseason cross-country poll. The preseason Iowa high school cross-country poll was released on Tuesday, and Northwest Iowa received plenty of recognition. In Class 4A, the defending state champion Sioux City North boys are ranked number 1. Jason Bowers was the state champion, but he is now at Iowa Western. The Stars start their season next week in Ankeny. In Class 3A, MOC Ford Valley was ranked number 8. Sergeant Bluff Luton was ranked 18th, and Lamar's was number 19th. The Western Christian boys are ranked number 2 in Class 2A to start the year, while Unity Christian isn't too far behind. At number 7, the Class 1A, the Siouxland Christian boys came in at number 16. On the girls' side, Bishop Heelan started the season at number 4 in Class 3A, with MOC Floyd Valley placing number 18. A trio of Northwest Iowa schools are bunched in the middle of the Class 2A poll, with Sibley O'Cheen at number 6, Unity Christian at number 7, and Cherokee at number 9. Woodbury Central Kingsley Pearson's co-op was voted in at 17th, and George Little Rock Central Line came in at number 20. One Northwest Iowa area team made the girls' Class 1A poll as Ridgeview started off in the number 16 spot. One last look at our weather before we sign off. Again, today a high of 90, a low of 68. On Thursday, partly sunny and breezy. Winds are out of the southeast, 10 to 20 miles per hour, a high of 92, a low of 69. On Friday, we have strong morning thunderstorms in spots. Winds continue to be out of the southeast, 10 to 20 miles per hour, 83 for a high, 61 for a low. On Saturday, we have a high of 81, a low of 56, mostly sunny, nice, and less humid. Winds do die down, but are changing directions, west-northwest. And then on Sunday, mostly cloudy. Winds are out of the southeast, 8 to 16 miles per hour, for a high of 88 and a low of 63. Well, that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal. Again, Wednesday, August 18th, 2021. I am your volunteer reader, Ike Rayford. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. As always, thanks for listening and have a wonderful day.